I've mentioned many times on this show how I am proud to be the daughter of a, I'm proud to be the father of a woman who is in school and about to become a senior in college and then graduate into the real world. And yeah, I know that made the hair on the back of my neck stand up as well, that graduating into the real world part. She goes to school in New York and is doing just great and is about to head back there for her senior year. But I was not happy to read recently that college textbook prices have gone up over 1,000% since I was in college in the late 70s. I kind of should have known this because I'm the one paying for those textbooks that you've got to buy because all those professors write books and then get publishers to put them in the bookstores and then they put them in their curriculum and we got to pay over $100, maybe more, for some of these books. It's a heck of a racket they are running. But it may not be anything compared to the racket that a lot of colleges and universities are running, if our next guest is correct. His name is Kevin Carey. He's an American education, higher education writer and policy analyst for the New America Foundation, where he's the director of their education policy program, and wrote a piece recently called The Fundamental Way That Universities Are an Illusion. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
I will tell you, as a person paying that university bill, knowing that I'm paying for an illusion could be very irritating to people like me.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. What do you mean that they're an illusion?
Well, the point that I was trying to make in that piece was we tend to assume that there are very big differences between different colleges and universities. Our whole admissions market is based on that. A lot of the pressure that high school students feel to get into the, quote, best college, shoot for the Ivy League or Washington University in St. Louis or one of the very elite schools is based on the idea that if you go there, the education you get will definitely be better than the education you'll get elsewhere. But that's not really true, and there's a lot of research that actually backs this up. If you look at the average kind of education that someone gets at one university, it tends to really not be that different than any other four-year university. To the extent that there are differences, they are much more within the universities themselves. You might have a good department and a bad department, a really good professor and a really bad professor. But universities don't really function as organizations that ensure a consistent high level of quality across their classes, even though I think they pretend to.
So for people who may have kids who are about to enter the senior year of high school, who are in that applying for college mode or will be soon, you're saying that the best known schools, the ones that come out at the top of every list of the best colleges in America, aren't necessarily better than the ones that might be in the next 100?
Well, it depends on a couple of factors. I want to make a distinction between the quality of the students that are admitted and the quality of the university. Some universities are very selective, and so if you go there, you can be sure that you're going to be surrounded by peers who are also very bright and high achieving, and that's something that's valuable in and of itself, and I don't mean to downplay that. But in terms of the quality of the teaching, the kind of education that you're going to get in the classroom, it really, really depends on the kind of program you're going to go into, for example. So you may know that a college has a very good engineering program, for example, and that might be true and that might be a reason to go there, but it doesn't mean that their English department is good or the history department or the math department.
Right. It's been a long time since I myself was in college, and when I went to a state school because we couldn't have afforded one of the top private colleges in this country. And I remember that my college experience, which, in the interest of full disclosure, I did not complete, but my college experience, I learned so much more outside of the classroom than inside the classroom. And that's an important factor to keep in mind also, isn't it?
I think that's right. I'm a state university graduate myself, and actually I graduated from college from high school in the 1980s, and my father had been a college professor, and I wanted to go to an expensive private college. And he said, you know what, I'm not going to pay for it because from my perspective, you can get just as good an education at the state university, and to a certain extent, it's what you put into it, not what the university gives you. And he saved himself some money, and I think he made the right choice.
So how is a consumer, meaning the parents of somebody who's going into college, and the student themselves, how are they to discern what is the right place for them?
Well, I think there's two scenarios. If you really know exactly what you want to do, and some students do. Some students know they want to be pre-med. Some students know they want to go to law school. Maybe you want to get a PhD in medieval history. Some people know that when they're 17 or 18. If you know exactly what you want to focus, then I think you can get some good information and start to find out whether the department that will be really teaching you for a lot of your education is a really strong department or not. If you don't know, and this is probably true for most students, if you see college as a place to find out what you might want to study, to experiment, to try different kinds of things, I guess my big advice would be don't pay too much for that. You can get that lots of different universities. If you want to experiment, that's not the time to borrow lots and lots of money to go to a really expensive private university. If you can get your kid into Harvard or Princeton, you probably ought to, but that's not most people. Yeah. And so I would really focus at try to find a quality, you know, public university, public institution where you can do that experimentation and save your money for graduate school when you finally know what you want to be.
This week, the Princeton Review came out with their multiple lists of the best colleges in a whole bunch of categories, and I know some of our listeners who send their kids up to Champaign-Urbana will be proud to know that the University of Illinois came in as the number one party school in America. Do those lists from these supposed third parties, do they mean anything?
They don't mean that much. I mean, those are ways to sell magazines. And to a certain extent, those lists, the reason that there's a market for those lists is because I think people sense that they're making a high-stakes decision, and they can't just go by the marketing materials that the universities provide or the campus tour that you get when you visit, which is always the same. It's always a very nice young man or woman walking around campus and showing you the beautiful Olympic gym that they have there. So people, kind of have a hunger for more information, and I think a lot of magazines make money by feeding that hunger. But I would not put too much stock in a best party school list. I don't think that's exactly an empirical analysis.
Or even a list of the best colleges, because, again, it might lean towards the ones that are obvious choices, but not necessarily obvious for your kid.
I think that's right. I mean, if you look at the U.S. News and World Report ranking, that's a ranking of which colleges are the most famous, the most selective, and the wealthiest. Those are things that matter in certain ways. But if your kid is, again, not in the top 1% of 1%, as by definition most kids are not, then those lists don't really tell you a lot. The difference between number 75 on the U.S. news list and number 125 is basically nothing.
Yeah. When I was taking my daughter around years ago to look at potential places for her to go to college, I can remember, and at least one of them, when we went to visit the campus, we got a whole lecture on how many great researchers they had on their faculty. And I thought, that means absolutely nothing to the future of my child in your institution. Was I right?
You are exactly right. Great researchers don't teach undergraduates, by and large. That's because they're researchers, and being a researcher and being a teacher are two different jobs.
Yeah, they might be good for the reputation of the school, but not for the education of the child.
Yeah, your intuition was correct.
Okay, one other thing I want to ask you about here, and it is something that you started your article, your op-ed piece this week with, and that is schools and their football teams and the relationship between the athletic department and the academic side of the school. Would you go into that a little bit?
Well, yeah, the anecdote I used was just at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, which until recently was seen as one of the very few highly selective research universities that also had very good sports programs and that had remained relatively uncorrupted by its involvement in big-time athletics. Well, that turns out not to be true. There was a massive scandal there. It turns out that thousands of students had been taking fake classes, both athletes and non-athletes. So there were football team guys on there. Women's sports were there, and then lots of students who just weren't involved in sports at all. But I do think that the amount of money that's now involved in big-time athletics is just really starting to kind of overwhelm the values and the character of our colleges and universities. College sports has been a problem for 100 years, and people have been complaining about how we care too much about the football team and not enough about academics, literally since the late 19th century. But the amount of money involved now with cable TV contracts and bowl games and coaches being paid $3 million a year and things like that is just, the scale of it is without precedent. And I think it is really putting a tremendous amount of stress on college leaders to stay focused on their real mission, which is not to entertain people, but to educate them.
Yeah. I know I said that was the one more thing I was going to ask you, but I just thought of something else. And that is online education. As technology continues to improve, we've had a lot of universities offering a lot of their courses online, some of them by video, some of them just online interaction in other ways. And I'm not talking about the for-profit places like University of Phoenix, which doesn't have a campus and only exists online, but brick-and-mortar schools that are pushing some of their professors into the online medium. Do you foresee a day anytime in the near future where you go to school without leaving your house?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in some ways, we're already at that day. I actually published a book a few months ago called The End of College, which is about exactly that question. What will the future of higher education look like, and how will information technology transform it? And basically, my thesis is that in the future, some people will continue to go to brick-and-mortar colleges because they're nice, and it's a kind of a fun place to hang out for 4 years and sort of live from age 18 to age 21. Some people, it'll be a mix of things. They'll go to some in-person classes because, to some extent, there's still no substitute for human to person interaction, but there are lots of other classes, again, right now, where you can take really, really good classes offered by some of the best universities in the world that are high quality, they're rigorous, you learn everything that you learn in a normal college classroom online. And then some people will, you know, probably more non-traditional students, adults with families, people with jobs who can't just sort of stop for 4 years and live in a dorm, we'll do it almost entirely online, and I think that will actually be a real boon to those people.
Well, I will tell you that as a one-time college student, I would not have wanted to go to just an online college and miss out on all the non-academic experiences that living in the dorm, et cetera, offered me. As I said, that's where I got a greater education than anything I got in any classroom. And as a parent of a college student, I want her out of the house.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And I think that's never going to change. Technology will not change that dynamic at all. I do think that they'll be able to go out of the house and to some place that does a better job of integrating technology to, among other things, bring costs down. It's kind of amazing. I mean, information technology has taken all kinds of information-centric businesses and made them both better and cheaper for people, except somehow for college, which is more expensive than it's ever been. I don't think that's sustainable, partly just because people won't be able to afford to pay for it, but partly because we can use technology to build better colleges than we have today, and I do think we're going to do that.
Your book is called The End of College?
Yes.
All right, and the New America Foundation is where he works. Kevin Carey is the director of their education policy program. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.